Down the road a bit, they found Carl and Joanna's diner.
Well, I'll be.
Excuse me?
He described you perfectly.
Ryan?
Sure thing, friend. He spent some time here in Leadville. He left a message for you. Real nice guy. Got in a bit of trouble, but a real nice guy.
What kind of trouble?
Three rough fellows put a blaster to the back of his head while he was eating and started accusing him of all sorts of killing or something. He got out of that all right, though. Handled them all himself. Very impressive.
And he left a message?
Sure.
Carl folded his hands in front of him like a child about to recite a lesson that he'd memorized.
He was going to cross over the high country between the two passes, down onto the trail above Breckenridge, and...
Joanna came out of the kitchen with a jug of creamy white sauce.
And he was going up to Fairplay, and he'd wait for you there. That was all.
Christy felt as though a great weight had been lifted from her heart. Ryan had obviously been to the school and been happy enough to leave Dean there. Now he was on his way up to Harmony, just part of a day ahead of them.
We'll stay the night here in Leadville and get going after him in the morning. When do you think we'll catch up with him?
Take the better part of 2 days to reach Fairplay.
Maybe longer.
Best get some food first.
Well, have a seat. Any friend of Ryan's is a friend of mine. And may I suggest the fish pie? It's made from fresh salmon and covered in a golden brown pastry with fluffy whipped cream potatoes and buttered carrots.
Yeah, give me two.
The light was fading fast, and Ryan picked his careful way down the steep trail. The path wound and doubled back on itself, so that it wasn't possible to see the source of the smoke that was coiling skyward from some distance farther on. A highway was just visible at the bottom of the valley. It was in deep shadow, but Ryan paused in the stillness and thought that he saw riders heading toward Fairplay. He couldn't be sure, but he thought he might have heard an armored wag in the distance. The shadows grew deeper by the minute. Ryan turned to see the silver pattern of chem lightning streaking across the western sky. Night seemed to sweep around him like a horseman's cloak. The moon was obscured behind banks of cloud, and he slowed to minimize the risk of taking a tumble on the rutted trail. The smell of burning grew stronger. Around the next sharp gooseneck bend, Ryan finally saw the flames. A Conestoga wag blazed brightly in the middle of the track, with a small group of men and women clustered helplessly around it. He was able to approach within 50 yards before anyone noticed him. Ryan stopped where he was, his hand resting on the cold butt of the Sig Sauer. He held up his left hand in a gesture of peace.
I'm alone! All right with you if I come ahead?
The group of people turned to one another and appeared to discuss it. Eventually, a white-haired man moved to the front.
If you're one of them, mister, and I can tell you that we've flat got nothing left for you to take, except for the poor lives of us that's left.
Whoever they are, I'm not one of them. I'm coming closer.
Ryan approached the group.
Who did this?
There were 4 men and 2 women alive. Only one of the men was under the age of 50. The women were both well into their 60s. Scattered around the blazing rig were 8 corpses, 5 young males, 2 little children, and a young woman with the back of her head blown away. The muzzle of a small revolver was still clenched between her teeth.
We're Quakers from back east, coming into the mountains to bring the word of God to the outlying communities. Been on the road for close to a year. Had some hard times in the past couple of weeks. Provisions ran low and we got bogged down to the axles in mud.
Ryan had never seen such a sorry lot. All of them were gray-faced and haggard, eyes sunk in sockets of wind-scoured bone, prominent teeth and fingers crooked like claws.
And the murderers came on us like wolves on the fold. We were helpless. Sister Rosalind there chose to take her own path in this vale of tears. She also slew her own children to spare them being taken.
Ryan looked across the valley into the blackness.
I thought I saw some men on horseback and heard a small armor wag. Is that the gang?
Yes. A mix of normal men. Some looked from south of the Grandee. And several stickies among them. I had never heard of such a racial mix before.
They were degenerate scum, Brother Angus.
And they took what little you had left? Anything else?
There were 5 women of a younger age. One was barely into her teens. The filth took them all and gunned down anyone who tried to stop them.
He looked at the bodies.
One was my son. They took Sister Persephone, who had agreed to be his bride.
Ryan looked around him, stone-faced. It was a total and appalling disaster for these people, yet it was a scene that he'd come across too many times in his life, particularly in the days with Traitor.
You wouldn't have any food, would you, mister?
Ryan hesitated. He had one roll and one of the peaches, plus a couple of mouthfuls of milk, enough to keep him going on into the next day. It wasn't even enough to scratch the surface for just one of the starving group.
No, I'm sorry.
What can we do? Where can we go?
Let's go back to Leadville. Nearest place I can think of where I know there'll be food.
We're jackless. They took it all. We must throw ourselves on the charity of strangers.
The charity of strangers wasn't that common a commodity in Deathlands.
Still, Leadville's closest. You gotta pick between a small chance and no chance.
The Lord will provide for us.
The old man fell to his knees, his hands clasped in prayer.
He will provide for his humble servants.
Not done much providing so far.
Ryan looked at the corpses and the wag, burning now to the flatbed. Another 5 minutes and that would be gone, and the survivors would be left in the dark and cold. He hunched his shoulders, feeling the first pattering of rain on his back. One of the traitor's most deeply held beliefs was that when you could help someone, you did. But if you couldn't help at all, then you didn't waste time on hanging around. Ryan couldn't take on the job of guide for the ragged survivors of the raid.
I suggest you all get to Leadville, now.
We're not going anywhere until we bury our dead.
Ryan's guess was that they'd be lucky to finish that chore by noon the next day. And by then, their strength would be hugely diminished, and most, if not all of them, would then die.
Your choice. What else can you tell me about the gang? How many were there?
Between 20 and 30. Probably 30.
Angus pointed to the corpses again. Proof was marked on two of the bodies, which showed where the suckers of the stickies had ripped away patches of skin and flesh.
You don't know where they were based? They didn't mention any names?
Brother Angus shook his head, his face a pale blur in the streaming darkness of the rain.
Wasn't like we'd have heard, friend. Too much yelling and cursing and chilling. Like something from hell.
From hell. Truly said, Brother Angus. From the deepest circle of icy, fiery Hades they came. Grinning, shooting, and slashing. Devils from hell.
Traveling onward, Ryan had been quickly soaked to the skin. It was a ferocious chemstorm, with violent shocks of pink-purple lightning. Out on the exposed flank of the mountain, with a rifle slung across his shoulders, Ryan felt vulnerable and sought cover, ending up crouched among the blue spruces that lined the trail. As he waited out the storm, he tried to guess whether Christie and the others were ahead or behind him. The odds seemed to be that they were behind, which meant there was a temptation to hole up for a day or so and wait for them. Perhaps when he reached the little Vale of Alma that was marked on his mental map, he would wait. But if they'd shortcutted him and got ahead, then every hour he waited would be another hour he'd fall behind. If they were behind him, then they should be safe from this killing gang. If they were ahead, then they could easily run into them. Despite JB's firepower, aided by the others, they would still be vulnerable to 20 or more armed killers. Ryan felt the hair standing on his nape, and he crouched lower, laying the rifle flat in the pine needles.
Fire blast.
It took him a few moments to collect his scattered thoughts. Christie and the others, the gang. One other possibility was that the gang had split into two or more parts in order to raid a larger area. But that made the range of imponderables so vast that it was a waste of time thinking about them. Dawn coincided with Ryan reaching the end of the track down at the valley bottom, with the highway leading left to right in front of him. Ryan's path lay to the right, to the south, more or less toward the rising sun that was just showing behind the high peaks. 8 miles would take him to Alma, and a further 6 or 7 to Fairplay. But it was going to be steep walking, and he figured he'd do well to cover the distance to the top before the middle of the afternoon. He had finished all his food and the last swig of milk. He brought his canteen to a stream of fresh meltwater. Before going on, he glanced up and behind him, trying to trace the track down from the head of the pass among the dense blanket of spruce. He wondered if he might catch a glimpse of Christy and the others, but knew what a long shot that was. Ryan turned and began the haul up the road, which glistened wetly in the dawn light. All the companions were well filled, and JB had ordered some trail food for the hike. Outside the steamed-up window of the diner, the morning looked bleak and miserable. There was no sign of any let-up in the grim weather. Rain streamed from a dark sky, forming rivulets along the blocked gutters at the edges of the highway through Leadville. It had poured all night, with spectacular thunder and lightning that had awakened all of them, except Doc, who claimed that he would have slept through the San Francisco earthquake.
Could have caused some double bad damage out on the high trails.
Ryan can look after himself, if anyone can.
Don't tempt Providence.
Sure he can.
Joanna was leaning over the serving counter.
Wish him all the best when you see him. And if any of you ever pass this way again, you'd be rightly welcome.
We will. And thanks.
Christy looked out at the dreary morning.
Let's get going.
Ryan had made the steep climb up toward Alma, seeing no trace of life for several hours. A telegraph pole on the right side of the road had been rigged into a makeshift crucifix, and the body of a naked woman hung from it. Ryan blinked up into the drizzle, looking at the corpse, suspecting that it might well be one of the kidnapped Quaker women. Not that anyone would ever have recognized her. It was impossible to tell at what point death had come to the poor wretch. The probability was that she'd still been living when they'd strung her up, using thin baling wire around wrists, elbows, and ankles to hold her in place. The wire had cut into the flesh, leaving deep, white-lipped gashes. The bruises told their own tale of how viciously she'd been used before death, and the circular, torn patches of skin showed the rending hands of stickies had been involved. The hair on her head and her body had been burned away, which also indicated stickies. Nothing in Deathlands loved fires and explosions like stickies did. After they'd used her to satisfy their lusts, the gang had crucified her, then used her for target practice. Ryan stared blank-faced at the sight. If he'd had any doubts of the sort of gang they were going to deal with, then this would have removed them. It was a brutal mob, with no sense of the dignity of life. Ryan drew his six hour, but no more pebbles rolled down the hillside. He guessed that it was a result of the heavy rain. Christy pushed back threads of soaking red hair from her forehead.
Something's lying at the side of the trail. Looks like a body.
The light was very poor, more like evening than noon, the visibility diminished by the curtains of rain that swept across the top of the pass.
Get one.
Man or woman?
Christy quickened her stride, feeling a lump like cold lead in her heart.
Can't tell. Got white hair.
It was an old man, and he wasn't dead. But he wasn't far off. Mildred knelt by the man and felt for a pulse.
It's barely there.
He was sodden and looked as if he'd been lying face up at the side of the road for some hours. Mildred carefully checked him over, then looked up at the others.
No chance. Hypothermia is way too advanced. If I had a hot bed and a warm room within 100 yards and skilled nursing staff, then maybe I could just save him.
She stood.
That's only a maybe.
What do we do with the poor old fellow?
Nothing.
We cannot just leave him. By the three Kennedys, he is our brother.
No, he isn't, Doc. He's a stranger. Help him if you can. If you can't, then you might as well move on. Sympathy won't help him. He's dying. Is that right, Millie?
I'm afraid so, Doc. A bullet would best put him out of his misery.
Butcher him?
Truth is, the old man's in no pain. He's in a deep coma, and he'll never come out of it. Weather like this will take him off in an hour or so. He's that close to the dark fairy, believe me, Doc. There isn't a single damn thing we can do for him. Can't even ask if he's seen Ryan.
Doc stooped and plucked a scarf from around the dying man's throat, folding it carefully over his face.
At least it will keep the rain from his eyes.
Ryan found another body, tossed by the side of the winding blacktop like a discarded toy. He guessed that it was one of the children kidnapped from the Quaker train. She lay huddled on her back with her throat slit, both arms broken.
Building up a hell of a blood score.
He picked up the little body and walked it over to a broad sycamore tree. He placed it gently beneath the tree.
Wasn't your day, was it, kid?
Because there seemed little evidence of serious danger, JB hadn't felt it necessary to order them into a strung-out skirmish line. He walked along with Mildred, while Christy had found herself taking the point position. Jack and Doc were behind her.
You say space started with a big bang from nothing? What was before nothing, Doc?
Fields, dear boy. Fields of potentiality. 37 of them, according to what was the latest thinking when they pushed me forward to Deathlands.
But how can something come from nothing?
You have to be able to wrap your brain about particles that have no mass and can be in two or three places at the same time. Difficult, I know.
Christy had been half-listening. The other half of her mind was fixed on Ryan. At least they knew that he was roughly a full day ahead of them. Shafts of silvery sunshine broke clear across the valley, showing them their destination, 1,000 feet or more below, and the ribbon of highway that wound back up to their right, toward where Christy knew Fairplay and Harmony lay. Everyone stopped to stare at the beautiful view.
Worthy of the painter Turner at his mystic best.
We could almost see Ryan from here, if we just knew where to look.
Christy was following the snaking trail down below them when her eyes were caught by what looked like the wreckage of a burned-out wag and some people, although none of them seemed to be moving. They made their way down to the group.
Brother, Angus went for help. I wanted to go after him, but can't make it.
JB, Jack, and Doc sat with the elderly woman as Mildred and Christy went to check the others. A snow-haired man and another old woman were still clinging by their fingernails to the ragged edge of life. Beyond the wag, on a flat stretch of the tundra before the first of the remorseless lines of blue spruce, were some graves. Some were completed, some half finished, and some barely started. One was full of water and held the floating corpse of a child and the body of a man, who looked as if he'd been digging, had slipped and fallen in head first, and drowned. Mildred returned to where Doc was sitting in the dirt, cradling the head of the old woman in his lap.
She said they were attacked by a gang that included stickies, and Ryan passed by them in the night. She can't remember more than that, but it must have been him. Tall, one-eyed man who tried to help. Her mind wanders, and I fear that she is also a candidate for that dark ferryman.
Yeah. She say anything else?
They're Quakers. Got attacked. Lost all their food, which was little enough. They were all close to starvation. Ryan told them to go back to Leadville. They insisted on trying to bury their dead. She says that's what pushed them all over the brink.
Ryan had an ace on the line. Time's gone and it's too late. If they'd struck off for Leadville straight away, most of them could have made it. As it is.
What do we do? They're all dying. We don't have the food or the facilities to help a single one of them.
Goes hard against the grain, but like John says, there isn't a thing we can do except stop and hold hands until they go.
How long would that be? It is grim to leave a fellow human being to a lonely passing.
Afternoon now. They'll all be gone by moonrise.
Doc carefully laid the dying woman's head in the dirt and stood. Her eyes had closed, and she seemed to have slipped into unconsciousness.
If we are to go, then it were best that we go quickly, before I allow my heart to take precedence over my head.
Time to reload. Deathlands is continued on the next CD.